It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
So what is this? Is it a podcast? Where is eye contact with this? Is this you here?
Consequence Podcast Network.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, checking out the series. You know what to do, like what you see, what you hear. Hit that subscribe button. I put out three new interviews every single week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify and Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, Steven Van Zandt. We got a handful of things we're going to get into. It's the 21st anniversary of Little Steven's Underground Garage, so we'll jump into that. We're also, of course, going to be talking about the current tour with Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band as well. Let's see here. Steven's going to tell us why the British invasion is so important to his radio show and its lasting impact on 60s culture, and also why he thinks we'll never see another musical revolution like it again. He's also going to reveal why Bruce and the band have decided to stick with a fixed set list for this current tour. We'll get into the mortality themes of not only the latest tour, but also the Letter to You album. And we're going to talk a little bit about social media as well, calling out some folks on there. All that and a whole lot more. 21 years of Little Steven's Underground Garage. It's Kyle Meredith with Steven Van Zandt.
Hello, Kyle. How are you?
It's a pleasure to have you on here. And we're talking about a few things. I know we're going to I'm going to ask about the tour with the E Street and all how that's going. But we got, it's sort of been a big anniversary for the Underground Garage. 21 years right around there since you launched this. Congratulations.
Yeah, I thank you. I know I should be keeping track of these things, but I have no sense of time whatsoever. It's one of my, you know, many eccentricities. But yeah, thank you. We kind of became somehow we stumbled our way into becoming an institution. I don't know how that happened. Nobody wanted the show at first. And here we are 21 years later. And that's nice. It's nice because a lot of people depend on us at this point, you know. We've in addition to, of course, playing all the classic stuff that nobody plays anymore, we also have introduced over 1,000 new bands, you know. So that's nice. Yeah, light and sweet if you can do it.
Yeah, I found plenty of those bands actually from listening to it is, people do depend on it, and people hoard the shows as their own, you know. Like, I remember even hearing an interview I was thinking right before we did this with Eddie Vedder, Pearl Jam, and he brought out a big binder that he collects your show, you know. Even that, do you hear from those fans like listen to that degree?
Yeah, we used to ship it, you know, on CD. Yeah. And and yeah, so a lot of people collected them, and yeah, he was an early listener, which was great. You know, he's a good friend.
Nice champion to have right there. Well, let's just back up a little bit. You know, for the 20 years, I mean, what was your vision when you launched this? And because it seems like it's been pretty consistent, you know, to, as you said, to dig into the history of rock and roll and to show off the new bands, you know, what you had in mind, is that still how it plays today?
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, you know, watch out what you wish for, right? You know, you're staring there at a blank page, and it just so happened I knew the guy who had taken over Sirius Satellite programming, and he says, well, you know, what should we do with this, you know? And I said, well, I just happen to have two new formats that I don't know what to do with, you know, so it's like perfect timing. But, you know, it's interesting when you have the opportunity to do anything you want, you know, anything, no rules whatsoever, you know. It really makes you think for a minute. And it took a little while to find my, you know, radio voice and all that, you know, the what exactly the show should be. But we pretty much hit the ground running. It didn't change a whole lot. The original idea was to make the British invasion the center of the universe, and play everything that influenced the British invasion and everything the British invasion has influenced, pretty much. And that really hasn't changed. I handpicked every song. I don't know what, I don't know how many songs we have now. It must be 6,000 or so. And so the sensibility that connected them really was just my own completely subjective, opinion, to be honest. But it was fun to connect the dots, play the original version, you know, of a song that's covered by the British invasion, you know. And then we started, well, much later, I don't know, about 10 years in, we started, we finally, you know, made that an official thing with the daily double play, what do we call it? The double play, the daily double, you know, where we'll play the original version with the cover version together, you know, but for years we just played them both, you know, as regular programming. So, but, and cover, and we cover, you know, we really cover the waterfront. I mean, we go back pretty much to 1951. So it's now 70 years, you know, 70 years of rock and its influences. So we'll, you know, we're the only place playing the original, you know, the blues stuff, you know, the Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters, you know, where it came from, and the pioneers like Little Richard and Bo Diddley and, you know, Chuck Berry, and then right up to, you know, every subgenre related to what became the British invasion, which includes the girl group thing, you know, the Beatles especially picked up on the girl group thing, you know, with, you know, the Shirelles and you know, all that, you know, chiffons and Shangri-Las and the surf genre also, influencing the Beach Boys and doo-wop, you know, influencing the Four Seasons. You know, we're probably the only place still playing doo-wop, which was really in the entirety of rock and roll when rock and roll started. It was nothing but doo-wop, really, you know, in the beginning. Rockabilly hadn't even happened yet, you know. So, you know, we played doo-wop, we played rockabilly. We added Slim Jim Phantom having his own rockabilly show.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Steven Van Zandt.
You know, we just try and cover all the subgenres that made the British invasion what it was, which was, as far as I'm concerned, beginning of a Renaissance period of the 60s that I think will never be equaled and will be studied for hundreds of years to come. I sincerely believe that and believe that the history will someday be divided at pre-60s and post-60s, you know, because it was the birth of not just an artistic Renaissance, but and that included movies and books and everything else, and, you know, painting, but also it was the birth of consciousness and the birth of mass media and you know, the birth of so many social movements. So there was a lot going on in the 60s. And so early on, I decided, you know, a lot of people feel like they missed the party, you know, and they kind of did. So I'm going to make sure that, we're going to, recapture as much as we can of that party. And not only celebrate the music, but also celebrate the culture. So we started having these little, vignettes about just silly cultural fun things. You know, let's talk about who invented the surfboard. Let's, who invented the hot dog? You know, who invented the drive-in theater? You know, let's celebrate Roger Corman. You know, let's celebrate, Jack Kerouac. You know, let's celebrate Lawrence Ferlinghetti. Let's celebrate everything that's cool, basically, because not very much is cool anymore. I'm sorry, so it became a thing of celebrating the 60s, mostly because that's the special era, and then picking the DJs that could tell first person stories. That was, something I really wanted to do. I wanted to have, instead of a journalist or whoever, talking about second person or third person or something they read about or something they heard about. I want to try and find people who were actually there if I could, So starting with Andrew Lou Goldham, who was just a phenomenal DJ for us. And now Mark Lindsay, we just added recently. It was just incredible, And other artists, Palmyra Delran, who was an artist herself. Of course, Michael DeBar, we wanted to have as much of that as we could involved. We inherited Roddy Bingenheimer, who was in the center of so much. I got to get him to tell more stories, because this guy has more stories than anybody, and he doesn't tell enough stories. I gotta talk to him about that. He's always finding new music still to this day. This guy broke Bowie, behind you. Mm-hmm. and the entire glam thing, he was so responsible for so much. And the minute they let him go in LA, which they shamefully should never have done, they kept moving his time slot later and later and later until he was on like 3 o'clock in the morning or something. And then they finally let him go. And I just call him the next day. I'm like, Ronnie, you're not going to be out of work for 24 hours. You come with us, So it was mostly bring personality back to radio. Okay. I grew up with radio. It was everything to me. We had a bunch of great TV shows on at the same time, I must say. We had like 10 rock and roll TV shows on. Can you imagine a world like that? But that only lasted 2 or 3 years. But radio was always really first, and it introduced us to the music we loved. And we had a relationship with the radio station and with the DJs. I wanted to bring that back. It's somewhere along the way, they chased all the personality out of music radio and chased it into sports radio and talk radio. And guess what? The audience went with them. That wasn't a coincidence. That's what people want. The people want that relationship, And it was just gone. It was gone from rock radio for, 30 years or something, And so we brought that back and brought back, IDs, artists doing, IDs again. And we brought in movie clips, we play movie clips in between the songs, just to, again, reinforce the 60s culture, mostly, although there are movie clips from every era, but just fun, man. Bring back some fun, because life is just so fucking boring. Jesus Christ, when did it become so boring? Really, It's terrible. And I feel so bad for this generation and the last generation and the generation before that. this has gotten more and more boring, especially since the 80s, you know. But that was already, you know, not nearly as much fun as, you know, we were having in the 60s and 70s. But anyway, so it's all that, you know. It's the coolest music. It's the coolest cultural stuff. And just, you know, fun, man, fun.
Well, I will say the cultural impact that it has had. And it reminded me, I mean, the things you're saying, I mean, this is complete coincidence that we're here talking about this. Like my very first thing, I am a child of the 80s. So my very first piece of music that I got was Born in the USA on cassette. But the next thing was all the Time Life cassettes that came out around that time, the little pink cassettes that they would sell on TV. That was all from the 60s. And that became, I became captivated. I mean, we were in a time in the 80s where, you know, the 50s became sort of what everybody was looking back. The 60s, the Wonder Years was a big show, you know, at that point. So you know, all of that became such an important time for me. So, you know, hearing when I finally did get turned on to the Underground Garage, I mean, listening to it is like getting a PhD in rock and roll. If you listen long enough, it really is. It's there, you know. It's and then when you look at the television shows of today, the music that, you know, ends up being the music that everybody's talking about, it ends up being the older music. It's not the newer songs that, you know. So it's not a question, by the way. It's just saying how much it is appreciated, you know, all the things that you were just talking about, what that actually does mean to us fans.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I'm a fan first. And by the way, this is all about being selfish, not being philanthropic. You know, not that we make any money from it. We don't. I wanted to turn the radio on and you know, have that experience that I grew up with. I mean, that's what the bottom line is. You know, it was all about me. You know, me being selfish and wanting to, you know, have some cool radio on again, you know. Nothing wrong with regular mainstream rock radio. I mean, you know, in its limited way, you know. I mean, that's the format that plays us, right? You know, I mean, you know, nothing wrong with them. And I'm on, and those are most of the stations I'm on as far as my my regular terrestrial, you know, my weekly show, which is still on. I don't know how many, 80 affiliates or whatever it is. Anyway, those are most of the stations that I'm actually on. Those, you know, those stations that wanted to be a little bit wider than the 300 records that they play, you know, whatever it is. You know, you go from 300 to 6,000. You know, so there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a bit limited, and you're not gonna get all the mixed genres. I mean, people said I couldn't do it. You can't mix the genres. You know, you just can't, you know, it's never going to work. You know, you can't play Howlin' Wolf, Into the Ramones, you know, into the Ronettes, you know, into the Woggles or whatever the new band is, you know. And I was like, yeah, you really can. You know, you really can do that because that's my taste and that's what I want to hear.
That's how people really listen to music.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and you want to have that diversity because it's all cool stuff, you know. And, you can't play anything. But, if I like it, I think, you know, there's going to be other people that like it. I mean, you have to have that kind of megalomaniacal ego to do this in the first place. You know, you have to say to yourself, you know, I am just the arbiter of, you know, cool. And, you know, if I like it, you know, millions are going to like it. And that turned out to be pretty true, actually, you know, luckily, you know, it was just by luck. But, you know, I'm a fan first, you know, I want to want to hear, I figure other people want to hear. And, you know, so that's the basis of it.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle and Meredith with Steven Van Zandt. Now take us from, you know, the airwaves to the stage, because I really want to quickly ask about the tour that you're on right now. Of course, E Street, Bruce, back out. And, you know, for the first time in a few years now. And I think, you know, it's so fun to watch how you interact with listeners and fans, Twitter, everything else. Because you know, even though they're fans, you don't hold back on calling their bullshit sometimes. And you know, one of the things I think that come up is you guys are playing a tighter set list this time around. You had mentioned online because, like, you're telling a story more than maybe you ever have. And I just kind of want to throw that out. What is the story and what was the decision behind kind of keeping it group like this?
Yeah, I had to let that guy have it the other day. You started off playing 28 songs and now you're playing 26. You know, I want my money back. You know, get the fuck out of here. Okay. Anybody measuring the show by the amount of songs or the amount of time you spend on stage ain't listening. You're not paying attention. Okay. You're some kind of accountant or something, you know, go fucking, you know, play with numbers somewhere else. You know, this ain't about numbers. It's about an emotional experience. Mm-hmm. And this one happens to be, I think, a special one. And the audiences are reacting in a way I've never seen in America. Okay. This is the strongest reaction we have ever received from audiences in America.
That's an incredible statement.
It is an incredible statement because we've had the best audiences in America always, always. They've always been, go to any show you want to go to. We've always had the best reaction from an audience. We just have a wonderful relationship. And this time they've just gone to some other level. And I think part of it is the show. It's different. It is different. But it's like more like a Broadway show, you know, and more like a typical show of a rock band. You know, most rock bands don't change any songs. You know, I know rock bands that have the set list laminated. that's the truth. Okay. More like one of my disciples shows, which is, you know, I always create a theme and a story. And so every song has a purpose, you know, so you don't just change songs. When I do my own shows, I don't change songs. I decide what the show is and stick to it. And most people do. It's like a Broadway show. Why? Because you're telling a story and every song has a purpose. And it's kind of, and of course, Bruce had the terrific Broadway show. That might be coincidental, whatever. But the last album we did, Letter to You, had the most coherent, I think, theme of Bruce's career, really. All my albums are thematic albums. You know, every single one of my albums, I come up with the idea first and the theme first and what I want to say, and then I write the album. Bruce had never really worked that way until this one. He happened to have longtime friends die, and he realized he was the last guy left from his original band, the Castiles, you know, when George Thies died. And that makes you think, you know, suddenly, wow, you know. And out of that grew that wonderful album, which is extremely high quality for a guy, you know, doing it this long and having no reason to continue being creative, honestly, you know. I mean, him and you know, Bruce and Bob Dylan particularly, you know, these two guys just, you know, they don't know how to stop.
Right.
You know, they just don't know how, you know.
Lucky us.
You know what I mean? The songs on Letter to You are incredible and they're going over incredible, you know. And in America, it's not like everybody in America runs out and buys a new album, okay? It's just one of those things. Takes a little bit more time in America. Mm-hmm. So you can see, you know, on some of the faces, you know, some people recognize the new songs, but most don't. And yet they're going over wonderfully. They're going over like people, you know, have been listening to these songs for decades. And that's because of the quality of the songs. You know, they're just immediately accessible, and they're just terrific. You know, so the album was mostly about, you know, mortality and I don't want to put words, you know, speak for Bruce, but in my mind, it was very much a very coherent sort of album, and that has kind of now, you know, been translated to the live show. And although the show is not exactly a best of show, it's more like a samples from each of our eras, you know. Interesting choices, I think, that Bruce made, and we haven't changed the set since the very first rehearsal. He just happened to hit on what he wanted to do very early in the rehearsal process. I mean, we only rehearsed, you know, four times or something, but the songs, even though they're from they're not all from obviously not all from The Letter to You, but they take on a bit of that theme, you know. They start to reflect. So it's not exactly a linear, literal storyline, you know, from beginning to end. But it has that color of the theme that comes from the album, especially, you know, now Backstreets in particular now takes on an entirely different meaning. You know, now it's about George Thies, you know. That's the wonderful thing about art, isn't it? You know, it just, you know, it's flexible and it can change from time to time. Great art, I think, does that. You know, it has insights and information about life, emotional information that's being communicated that can shift according to your own situation, your own circumstance, you know, and that's a classic example of it right there. You know, in a show, he does Last Man Standing in the middle of the show into Backstreets, and does this rap at the end of Backstreets. It's incredible. I mean, it's the most emotional thing, and so and that's not true with every song, and that's not the intent, you know. We're still going to throw in some fun things and some things that aren't related to the theme, you know, but overall, somebody on Twitter the other day added, you know, it's about mortality and vitality, you know, which I like that. So the Twitterverse isn't all bad, you know, it just, you do,
moments.
I do occasionally learn things after I go on troll patrol, you know, and mute all the fucking MAGA assholes, you know, which, you know, it's almost a full-time job. I don't know what they're doing in my fucking feed to begin with. I mean, you know, what are they doing?
I'm in Kentucky. I'm used to that one. So, yeah. Right.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're not kidding. I don't know how those two fucking senators keep getting elected. I mean, talk about, you know, an election process that needs to be examined. I mean, how do those two assholes keep getting elected down there? Well, they haven't done one single thing for the population. Not one thing. Name one thing, okay, that Rand and McConnell have ever done for the fucking Kentucky population, the working class. Nobody can name one single thing, okay? I mean, how do they keep getting elected? I don't get it. You know? I'm telling you, I blame the DNC for this. You know, let's not. We're not going to get into this. You know, because you know that's another 3 hours of me.
Right.
You know, of me. You know, bashing these motherfuckers. But you know, I mean, I'm sorry. You know, people were so thrilled that we only lost the House by 5 seats. I'm like, what? You know, what is the matter with you? You know, Mrs. Lincoln, you know, don't worry about it. It was only a small caliber pistol.
Right.
Sorry about that. You know, I mean, what? You know, to lose to these complete lunatics, you know, I mean, it's embarrassing. You know, it's embarrassing. They should have gone door to door in Kentucky, door to door. And just ask people, why are you voting for this guy? What is it about these guys that you like?
Okay. Well, I can honestly say it wasn't us in Louisville, but we're sort of the outlier in the state. So one of the couple outliers. But anyway,
we love Louisville. Louisville is a special place. You know, I'm an old gambler from way back. So, you know, it's one of the sacred cities, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I saw you posted about the Derby, and I was thinking, like, you know, we gave NRBQ to the world. They came from here. We give the Rugbees for the moment back in the 60s. You know, they came from here. My Morning Jacket, Slant, and all that stuff later, you know. But I figure, like, you probably got some ties somewhere in there. Just the amount of ties that you have.
Yeah, Kentucky Headhunters, right? Yeah, well, I got, you know, my one of my best friends, you know, Backstretch Billy, lives there. And, you know, he's my track guy. So we occasionally, you know, visit and, go and visit my money occasionally. But anyway, let's not go there either. All right.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Steven Van Zandt. The tour has been fantastic to watch. And of course, I've been watching from afar online and everything and seeing what you guys are doing. And when then the Only Strong Survive tracks make it in there. And I'm just so happy that you guys are still doing it, you know, and what, you know, still is possible for the future. I mean, as a Greedy fan, you were talking about, you know, it's all about you and your and making it greedy. I'll say it's like, in the fabled vault, I'm so curious, you know, what else is hiding, because it seems like every album has a story of like, oh yeah, we started working on this so long ago and now it became this. And it's like, you think there's more on the way like that?
I don't know. You know, he's always got something somewhere, you know, it's just like endless. And he's always got an album or two in his pocket, you know? I'm never going to be surprised what he pulls out. But those were nice surprises to me. I wasn't that familiar with those songs. I mean, you know, the real fans, of course, were. I didn't really remember if I were a Priest or Janie, Needs a Shooter, you know. And they were just terrific, you know, terrific songs to redo. You know, you're never going to write that way again. You know what I mean? There's a certain innocence with those early, that early stuff that... it's just so refreshing and nice and, you know, just having fun with words, you know. I mean, you know, nobody loves the English language more than Bob Dylan, okay? I mean, this guy just loves the language, okay? And we've all learned from him. But, you know, Bruce in those early days was very, very influenced by the early Bob Dylan. And so he fell in love with the language as well, you know. So you know you get these storylines, you know. Well, like Bruce says, when we do If I Were a Priest, he's like, you know, I still don't know what it means, but we like it, you know. Yeah, but that, in those days you didn't have to know what it meant, you know what I mean? You were just having fun throwing words together and you know, creating images and, you know, let people make up their own stories, man. You know, that's part of the process too. It's nice. It's nice to leave some room when you can for the audience to participate. You know, art is best at that, really. You know, art and religion, you know, they both work because of an element of mystery. You know, you don't want to know everything about it. You know what I mean? You don't want to really know, too many details sometimes. You want to be able to participate and make up your own, you know? So, you know, those early songs have that sort of random just coolness to it, you know?
Love how the tour has been going and the storyline. I really do enjoy this set. But let me tie it back around. I'm going to close out with this because, again, 20, 21 years of Underground Garage, that ain't nothing, especially in radio. And I know that personally. Congratulations. I hope you do this for another 20, 30, 50, 60 years because it's important.
Well, thank you. Certainly, I hope the format, both this format and my other format, Outlaw Country, which basically does the same thing, you know, basically plays all the cool songs that nobody else is playing, you know, basically. In Outlaw Country's case, it's all three generations of Hank Williams, which sums it up, you know. I think both formats hopefully will live, you know, beyond me, you know, as I hope my school curriculum will, you know. So, it is important. You know, more important than I am, and hopefully it will continue to connect the dots, you know, because this era will be, like I say, it will be special until they invent new instruments, you know, and even then I think they'll probably be, you know, studying Chuck Berry, you know, copying Chuck Berry and Little Richard, and so you know, the idea is to continue to reinforce where things have come from. There's still a resonance, even though you know, yeah, rock is no longer part of the mainstream and it's no longer on the charts, you know, but the sensibility that comes from the rock era is still present with us, you know. A great rock band, and we introduce a new one almost every week. I mean, great bands, and you know, they're going to have a following. You know, it's never going to be mainstream again, maybe. You know, maybe they're never going to have a hit per se, but hopefully people come out and support them when they come and play live, and they're going to still get something out of that experience that's important and essential and unique. Unique. There's something unique about rock, you know, and all the subgenres that come from it. So we know we will continue to do that, and like I say, beyond me, it'll continue, and that's important.
Well, thank you, Stephen. Thank you so much for doing it, and thank you for taking the time to talk about it.
My pleasure, man.
My thanks to Stephen Van Zandt, 21 years of the Underground Garage, and of course, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band on tour throughout the year. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Before you get out, I do hope you hit that subscribe button. Again, it's 3 new interviews every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. At iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify and Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews. That's Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. Of course, you can also find me on the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all three of them. The address is at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Consequence Podcast Network.
You know, some real smart guy is going to invent a computer that has the camera in the fucking middle where it should be. You know what I mean?
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.